Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Super Fantastic Nerd Hour. We are on episode 27, and we are discussing all things Nintendo today. I am H.A. Conrad, here with my wonderful co-host, Ali Matu. Hello, Ali.
How's it going, Conrad?
Going well, and we have a very special guest today joining us for this discussion, because this is not Conrad's forte. So, with us today, we have Moira Fogarty, who hails from the great white north of
Hello.
Canada.
It's a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Moira, we are so excited to have you. You have been evoked on the Super Fantastic Nerd Hour a few times, and now here you are in person, kind of, on the internet.
Kind of. This is as close as it gets for many people, you know, except the very few fortunates. Yeah. Well, I hope that I'll be able to do justice to the wide, wide world of Nintendo, and not just the legacy items that I know inside and out, but the brand new Wii U, which my household, apparently like every other household in the world, acquired a little late. We just got ours delivered 3 weeks ago. So we have stopped showering and cooking and have just been playing Mario Kart 8 pretty much for the last month.
It sounds like what a lot of people have been doing the last month.
So I'm ready to go.
This is going to be a great panel. We're talking the state of Nintendo. We're going to be mashing up some video game giants in the Infinite Crossover Chamber. Conrad, who's in the chamber this week?
Today we have Nintendo versus PlayStation, and it's a pretty interesting question that you and Moira have come up with.
The question of who will survive. This is going to be interesting. And then our top five today is top five Nintendo products. This is going to be interesting. I can't wait to hear what you guys have on your list. So let's go ahead and get started. We've got a lot to talk about today. You know, I'm actually a little curious just to hear from each of you. How did you guys get introduced to the wonderful world of Nintendo?
Well, I was introduced to Nintendo a time long ago and far away. we got for Christmas one year, we got our first Nintendo games and game console, and we played Super Mario Brothers and Zelda until our little hands fell off. So yes, that was it. And I think we all fought over it, me and my many siblings. And I will admit that there were times when one or two people may have hidden said console so that, you know, we could basically get home and immediately find it, hook it up, and be the first person on there after school.
Wow. Well, yeah. I have to say, I'm pleased that I grew up as an only child, because I never had those sorts of problems. but my first introduction was probably in really early, actually. I'm going to say 1983, 84. My cousin, I have two cousins, and their father was a pilot for Cathay Pacific. So he flew in and out of Hong Kong quite a bit. And he was an early gadget nerd. So he had some of the earliest computers I'd ever seen. And he brought back for us a game and watch system, which was one of the first things. It looked like a DS, but it had Donkey Kong on it.
Yeah.
And I think I was about 6 or 7, so I played with it for about half an hour. And then I remember thinking, wow, that's really boring. And that was it. until maybe 1994 or 5. And then I got the classic NES, and from there it was just a rolling series. Yeah, I've actually owned just about every Nintendo system since then. And I still have most of them. So the big one that I remember playing when I was younger that I think speaks a lot to what the direction is that Nintendo's gone in was Disney's Adventures in the Magic Kingdom. I bet nobody else has played this.
No.
It was a Capcom game, and it was a series of mini games, which is what they've gone into now with WarioWare, Nintendo Land, Wii Play, all that stuff. And you had to go through, and the big prize at the end, if you answered a bunch of questions and made it through Disneyland, was the parade. And we played it. It was a single player, but four of us played it together. And I clearly remember being so stoked and having rounds of high fives all around when we got to the parade. And I've never felt that much pure joy about a video game since, really. So,
well, Moira, you're one of the few people I know who was introduced to Nintendo prior to NES. You played one of their original sort of portable kind of systems, and they played around a lot themselves as a company with those products before they got to the NES. So that's pretty cool. You know, I had my introduction is similar to both of you. The big one was the Nintendo Entertainment System. I didn't have it. I was very jealous. My cousin Aisha, she had the NES, so I would play it at her house with her and my other cousins, and that was a lot of fun. And I have these very vivid memories of playing, I think it was the Olympics game that had that pad that you could run on, and you know, of course, Duck Hunt and Super Mario, or just Mario Brothers back then. But my first Nintendo system that was mine and my own was the Game Boy. That was the first system I owned. Prior to that, my family invested in the Commodore 64 and PC, personal computers, and all of that. And I have lots of vivid memories of playing Pitfall and a bunch of other games on the Commodore. But the Game Boy was my very first system, and I treasured it. Absolutely treasured it. Played hours and hours and hours of Tetris.
Some of us still do that.
It's an amazing game.
Also helps out with PTSD, from what I hear.
Really?
Yeah, apparently they use it as a tool, because you can't make those little blocks fit. You know, you can't focus on trauma and make those little blocks fit in place. So they actually use it sometimes as a therapy tool.
Interesting.
Yeah, totally. It's it's just such a fascinating game. And there's such a fascinating history with Tetris and how it was made in the Soviet Union without copyrights, and how it kind of went all over the place. So let's talk about Nintendo a little bit. We've all kind of had our main exposure to Nintendo was in the 80s. And the rise of Nintendo, I think, is a very interesting story. We'll link to this in the show notes. But Play Value has a nice sort of documentary about Nintendo and how they came to be and how they were this company that had the Super Famicom in Japan. And there was this idea that video games might be a fad in America. And, you know, the PC computers, that's what was going to take over. But Nintendo rebranded the Famicom as a Nintendo Entertainment System, went door to door in New York City trying to convince stores to carry it, partnered with some resellers, got the Nintendo in stock. It started selling, and then it was game over when Mario Brothers came out. Nintendo just took off, and Atari was nowhere to be seen, and the rest is sort of history. What do you guys think? Yeah, go
no,
for it.
No, I was going to say it, as a person who loved my Atari, I really did, but when you compared it to what was on Nintendo and to those games, there just really was no question, and it was amazing, and a little bit like crack. I remember hours and hours and hours and playing this game, and obviously in addition to my siblings and I trying to hide it from each other so that we would get to be the one to play it. It was just this time consuming thing. You were just obsessed with getting to the end of these puzzles, basically.
I think you kind of nailed it, or you hit the nail on the head right there, Conrad. It was this time-consuming thing. One of the cool things about that original NES is it was such a departure from what we saw before it. Atari, the controller, while very iconic, was very much based on what we saw in the arcades a little bit, and NES had this different controller. And once we get to Zelda, it was about long-form gaming. And even with Mario Brothers, it was was a different way of gaming where it wasn't just about eating your quarters and then trying to get you to insert more coins in and trying to get you to die as quickly as you can so they can get more money. But it was about long form gaming. I mean, it seems like the NES was a game changer.
Long form gaming, also talking to your friends about the different shortcuts. You know, like the cool little things you could figure out.
Yeah, the Easter eggs definitely were a thing that people started to, like, you know, buy books about so you could be as cool as your friends or outdo them and know which, you know, completely invisible part of the screen where you jump and suddenly a box is there.
Right. And I mean, and it was a little bit, you had some of this in earlier gaming. I mean, I think there's always a little bit of those kinds of things. Game designers have always had.
Yeah.
This thing about putting secret messages in games and putting them there for people to find. But this was the point where it became everybody could talk about it, you know?
Ernest Cline has written about that in Ready Player One, which I know you guys reviewed already. So Easter eggs, they're a big thing. But I think the other thing that set Nintendo, early Nintendo games, apart for me was that when you were comparing, for example, playing Sega, which I know is something else that Comrade likes to speak to, you know, Sega demanded absolute perfection every time to get from the start of the level to the end of the level. If Sonic fell and lost his rings in a pit of spikes, that's it. Start at the beginning, sucker. Whereas with Mario Brothers, they had save points. And that was huge for me because I'm actually not a very good gamer. I'm really uncoordinated. My hand-eye blows. But if I can, you know, just get a little bit further every time, that's where the crack comes in. That's where you start to get very caught up in the idea that I have done this, I'm doing it a second time, and the second time I'll be better and I'll know more. And that's what makes the replayability of Nintendo games such that, I mean, not only do they have it on the NES, you can still play Super Mario Brothers on the Wii U. How many years later, right? Like, they keep remaking these games because they never get old.
Well, and there's so many innovations there that happened with the NES. And you're talking about the replayability. I think with Zelda, they had the battery in there that allowed you to save the game. And it was it was about a story and letting that story unfold. And I think we're dancing around the elephant in the room here, but Shigeru Miyamoto, he is the soul of Nintendo, and he is the brain behind so many of these great Nintendo games, whether it is Mario Brothers or Zelda, Star Fox, and going all the way to Super Mario Galaxy. He's the individual that created the rules for how these video games work. And I think those basic ideas of going through a level, learning new skills, having those skills tested with a mini boss, and then getting to a next level and learning all new skills that, and everything culminating in a final boss that challenges every single thing you know. That was Miyamoto, and that was Mario Brothers, and that was Zelda. And that is something that is still the core DNA of how video games work. He is so much of Nintendo is not only the hardware, but also the innovation of the video games.
Yeah, and the fact that he's still there, pretty much at the helm of the company and still directing where they're going to go is a huge thing. Like, that does not happen very often in any kind of corporation that's been around as long as Nintendo's been around. Nintendo has been around forever, since before the 1900s when they were making playing cards. Admittedly, not Miyamoto himself. He's obviously not that old, unless he's
that would be
something
cool.
From us.
It would be so cool if he was, if he's like this superhuman thing.
Yeah, I you know, the Japanese, they're very, they have longevity on their side. It could be true. I'm not willing to just throw that out as an idea. But
I think, I think the only comparison we really have here is Steve Jobs and Apple. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, Steve Jobs is no longer with us. But I think that some of these ideas about what makes these two companies unique and how they are so much that they are a part of the soul of these individuals, it's hard to unlink Nintendo and Miyamoto, just like it is hard to unlink Steve Jobs and Apple. And that's a whole nother episode with Apple. But he's so much linked to this.
Definitely.
What do you guys think it is that sets Nintendo apart? I mean, we've talked about Apple, and I think there's something about Nintendo where the software and hardware connection, and I think there's something unique here. What is it about these systems and the games that Nintendo creates?
Definitely. I mean, I speak as a Canadian here when I say that I think there's a lot of danger in linking software and hardware, which is not the message Nintendo always puts forward. They say that software is what sells hardware. And that, I think, is why they're so protective about having it on their systems and nobody else's. Like, you cannot play Mario Brothers on your iPhone unless you use an illegal emulator, for which Nintendo has always had a zero tolerance policy, right? They're very public about that. They say that it not only infringes on their intellectual property, but also harms the developers. But in my country, BlackBerry has been a big story in the news recently, where for a long time they had both the software and hardware completely linked. They got in early on the corporate front, and then BlackBerry Messenger, which was a basically early text messaging, but with more locks and definitely went between people who were in business, was a big reason why people wanted to stay with BlackBerry. And now they're tanking, like they are really having a hard time. And part of it, I think, is because they were so unwilling to put different operating systems onto their hardware and so unwilling to unlink their software from it. And I worry that that's the same problem that Nintendo may have. But they're so married to it. They like to make toys. They like to make things. And I know we'll go into peripherals a little bit later, which is a huge part of Nintendo. But I truly think that they're gamblers is what makes Nintendo for me. They go out on a limb. They try things that nobody else has tried. And then way later, people pick up those crumbs of ideas and form whole companies out of them. Like, you know, as much as it was a commercial disaster, they had the Virtual Boy in 1990. And you cannot tell me that that thing is not an early prototype for the Oculus Rift.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that if Nintendo does survive, and I guess I'm showing my hand a little bit here for the show off, but they're going to be the people who bring us the Holodeck. It might end up being like the Wii Deck, and, you know, it'll probably have to get plugged into like the Wii 3000 as a peripheral, but they are so always willing to go out on a limb and always willing to try something different.
By evoking Star Trek and Nintendo, you just majorly pushed the right buttons for me, Moira. I really like what you said here about they make toys. And they originally tried to market the Super Famicom in America as a computer, and that didn't work. But then they shifted their marketing a little bit, turned it, rebranded it as a Nintendo Entertainment System, got it in with this sort of idea of selling it as a toy. And I don't think they see hardware and software separately. And you're right here. They say software is what drives hardware. And that's a line that Reggie has been saying recently here in America with the disappointing Wii U sales. And we'll get into that in a little bit here, too. But they see this as one singular product. Mm-hmm. And time and time again, we've seen that from Nintendo. And you're also talking about peripherals. Let's get into peripherals. It has started. The Nintendo legacy has started with these interesting peripherals. Duck Hunt and the and then NES Zapper.
That Zapper. I love that thing.
Oh, yeah. Were you guys also, did you spend so many hours trying to figure out how it worked when you were young? Yeah. I don't think I still know how it works. How did that thing work?
You obviously didn't break it apart enough. I got to tell you, a lot of it involves soldering. So just probably if you still have one, you should hang on to it because it's now an eBayable item. But
oh, yeah.
I think mine is still in my attic at my mom's house. So
it's lasers. Basically, it's lasers. I'm just making that up. That's not how it works at all. But I mean, yeah, they've done incredible stuff. They had like wearables before wearables were a thing.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're a hipster, you should be so into Nintendo because they had that power glove way before people are now starting to talk about like, you know, hand things and they're like watches that can give you your email. We had like, you know, maracas that you could play games with. That's amazing.
Do you remember the Power Glove ads though? It was so exciting. It was always this kid dressed in this.
It was so cool.
And then when you actually got it, it was like, what does this even really do? You
know? Excruciatingly disappointing.
The ads were much more of an exciting thing than the actual Power Glove.
But it weren't no Zapper.
It was sort of, I kind of saw it as this like Michael Jackson glove that's like souped up with technology. And it was a little Captain EO, a little like, you know, other stuff. But this gets back to the idea of experimentation, whether it's a power glove, whether it's a Donkey Kong bongos, and then kind of leapfrogging forward to the Wii and all the peripherals we see with the Wii. Nintendo isn't afraid of experimenting.
Yeah. And that's what makes them great. And I mean, it's interesting too. I know we'll be talking about this much later on, but where they're going towards the future, they've been starting to talk about the idea of non-wearable technology. And I want to know what they mean by that. They're talking about, you know, quality of life as a future thing, because a lot of people associate gaming. And I must admit, I have been to a couple of Penny Arcade Expos and I love my people. We are not a fit people. We spend a lot of time sitting on our binoculars and, like, you know, if you're going to be a good gamer, you're not out jogging. Like, it's not exactly a healthy lifestyle because of the nature of gaming being very sedentary. But Nintendo was one of the first people to say, okay, well, let's make it less sedentary. Let's make a Wii Fit scale that will also act as a balance board. Let's turn it into Wii Sports. Let's give people tennis rackets. Like, even if they're just doing it in their living room, at least they're doing something. They're standing up, which then ballooned into, like, you know, the idea of Dance Dance Revolution, all that kind of thing. So I think they're moving towards a different perspective on gaming, a healthier look at gaming, which is a great thing and necessary.
Well, I think that we're going to be talking about lots of different systems and games and stuff like that in our top five. But I think a nice thing to bring up here now is the Wii. The Wii was a massive experiment. It was a radical departure from the other systems. So while Microsoft was launching the Xbox 360 and going with more power, and Sony was going with the PlayStation 3, its cell processor, including Blu-ray into it, more power as well. Nintendo said, oh, no, hold on. We're going to go in a different direction. We're going to cut down on the specs here. We're going to make this a little bit more affordable. We aren't introducing HD. We're not going to have a next generation optical device here. We are going with a motion controller. We're going to put this thing that you probably haven't heard of, but it's going to be really big in a few years. It's going to be in all your cell phones. We're going to put an accelerometer here into the controller and check out these cool games and check out in Zelda what you're going to be able to do. And now look at this. I don't remember what that game was, but it was a launch title with like sword fighting and stuff like that. And the Wii then later on added in all of these health aspects, and you had Wii Sports, where it was probably one of the first games since, you know, Nintendo's older games, that Olympic game I mentioned before, where you are playing standing up. You're moving, you are doing things. The Wii was a radical experiment for Nintendo, and it paid off. They made a ton of money off the Wii.
Well, and that idea, too, is that I think that another thing that makes Nintendo unique is they're very much child conscious and family conscious, in the sense that constantly while you're playing the Wii, they'll give you a reminder. If you are playing a sit-down game, they'll say, hey, maybe you should remember to get up every now and again and have a stretch. Like, don't forget to turn off the machine.
That's where it has an open window. And I always looked at that and it was like, hey, don't you want to open your window, get some air in here? Probably smells. You've been playing this video game for a long time.
You've got gamer stink.
Yeah. Essence of gamer.
But it's also that not a lot of other systems actually make games that are really, truly child appropriate. It's the same problem that we have with comic books. A lot of them are for 18 plus. And, you know, how are you supposed to get people into the industry if they're starting once they're already adults? It's a big problem. Whereas, you know, anybody of any age can pick up almost any Nintendo game and just start playing. And they've got very basic step-by-step helpers to help you through the game, to the point that I, as an adult, now find them deeply annoying.
Yeah.
Monita, you whore, get out of my face. I don't want to talk to you. But, like, you know, that is a thing that I think is amazing for them. And I know one of the next things that we wanted to discuss, I'm completely skipping over backwards compatibility, was online play. I want to talk about it.
Well, I'm interested here a little bit with Conrad. We haven't heard from you in a while. I'm just curious, Conrad, is this when you departed from console gaming?
I have played on the Wii, actually, I think at Moira's house many years ago.
Yes.
And, you know, it made me think in terms of, and I was thinking the same thing, just in terms of the adding in the physical element, and that was an interesting piece, but it wasn't, you know, and I remember watching Total Recall when Sharon Stone plays Arnold Schwarzenegger's evil wife and she's playing tennis and thinking, oh, maybe this is what they're going for. You know, you play the tennis and if you get the form right, then it gives you a gold star or whatever. And could see that being an interesting aspect and a better aspect for a lot of people. As Moira points out, the Penny Arcade PAX crowd is not always the most fit. And I, you know, I'm guilty of this as well, just with other things that I do in terms of binge watching and things like that. I tend to, when I game now, I tend to game on my phone, on my commute. I don't have a console. I certainly don't have multiple consoles. I am a fan of the emulators, so that takes out a lot of Nintendo stuff. You know, and it's... I find, you know, I think Moira's correct, though, is that if you are getting into gaming, I think Nintendo is a much better system in terms of people who have never played before, whatever, getting into, to the point of being annoying, as she pointed out. But I think much more so than any of the sort of online gaming forums and things like that, I think it's much more accessible. Mm-hmm. Well, and I wonder if other people or other developers are thinking about that in terms of like, okay, well, if we make this game so that really only hardcore gamers can play it and have to like gather up whatever things they have to gather up and get to the certain levels, is that just knocking out an entirely new generation of gamers?
Well, I don't think your story here is the outlier. I think a lot of people are in the same boat as you. And when the Wii came out, Nintendo completely shifted their direction as a company. If we look at the 90s and the trends there, arcades disappeared, and in America at least, and maybe in Canada as well. I don't know, Moira.
Except for in Portland, of course, because the 90s are still alive. Portland.
Yeah. And so we also had Sega, who was the big competitor to Nintendo throughout the 90s. They had to fold. They couldn't keep up. They made too many systems, burned a lot of their user base by going from the Saturn very rapidly. Well, going from the Genesis to the 32X to the Sega CD to the Sega Saturn to the Sega Dreamcast, people just couldn't keep up. They folded, became software only. And then we got Sony, and that'll take us to the crossover a little bit later. But when the Wii came out, they sort of, I don't want to say they folded on pushing technology and getting that quote unquote hardcore gamer audience, but they went for this weird mix of accessibility and their core competencies of Mario, of Smash Brothers, and all of that. And I think it's had, it brought in a lot of new people. I think it brought in a lot of older people. I know a lot of people of my parents' generation love the Wii, and it brought in some casual gamers, but it also lost a lot of people who said, you know what, I want to go play Halo on the Xbox. Final Fantasy isn't on Nintendo systems anymore. I'm going to go pick up the PlayStation. The Wii was a departure point for many gamers.
Yeah, it took them in a very different direction. And I mean, I think if you look at it, one of the biggest things that it's done, it set them as being a company that's interested in making an experience that will be good for a number of people in one room, as opposed to a huge number of people in hundreds of different rooms, possibly on different continents, which is what a lot of the other gaming systems are going for, right? Like if I'm playing Halo on my Xbox, I can be playing with you know, one of Comrade's family members in Colorado, or I could be playing, you know, I could be playing with anyone in any country. We don't have to be in the same room. We can still chat. But if you're playing on the Wii, if you're Wii bowling, you're Wii bowling with someone standing right next to you looking like just as much of an idiot as you are with your Wii nunchuck and your Wiimote. So, I mean, it's very much about bonding in a space as opposed to bonding in a virtual space, like a physical space.
That's a great way to frame this debate about online play now. And, mm-hmm. whereas Nintendo's going for local experiences, physical experiences, and these other consoles are going for online experiences. I recently had the experience of inviting some of my coworkers over to play video games just a couple months ago, and these are a bunch of guys who haven't played the last generation and a half of video games. So they were busy with school or other stuff. They just never got into it. And so I wanted to introduce them to the Wii, to the Xbox 360. And I asked a bunch of my friends, and those are the two systems I own right now. And I asked my friends, my gamer friends, what do you recommend to play on the Wii? And it was very clear. Like they said, play Mario Kart. That's what you want to play. And then I said, what about the Xbox? And they're like, Halo, that's about it. There aren't many good four-player local games on the Xbox anymore. It's primarily an online system. So there is this departure where most of the other systems, since with the current generation, the Wii U, PlayStation, the new PlayStation, as well as the new Xbox, as well as the previous generation, the Wii, the Xbox 360, the PlayStation 3. The Wii was really the only one that was focusing on multiplayer local games.
Yeah, and I think that's nice. I think it's very much, to me, an idea of Japanese values, because it's that idea of sort of family culture and having like people together in a space. It's like when I went to Japan, I ended up doing karaoke in a small room with just my intimate friends, as opposed to standing in a bar on a stage in front of a people I didn't know.
That's the best way to karaoke.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a really different attitude towards things, and I think it's nice. I mean, it's good for little kids, but it's also good for drunk 20 or 30 somethings who are looking to blow off steam and have had one too many beers and they're like, dude, let's bowl or let's play Super Smash Brothers. You know, let's play Mario Kart. It can be a really good time.
But I also think that just culturally, you're talking about the popularity of arcades, arcade games and things like that. But in Japan, there was a lot more of that going on with the Dance Dance Revolution and all this stuff, where people are actually going out and as a social thing are going out and playing games in addition to karaoke and all of that, which is very different than what has been going on here in America. I mean, I think there's been a resurgence, and there's definitely, I mean, I think Ready Player One is showing some of that nostalgia for these times. And you've seen different documentaries like The King of Kong and all this stuff coming out, where there's definitely a subculture of people that are super into some of these classic games and this experience. But that has not been the overall gamer experience as it's been basically evolving.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you're totally right, Conrad. The arcade collective experience has never stopped evolving in Japan. It continued from the 90s, and Nintendo is tapping into that aspect of the culture there. But I gotta tell you, the online play, or the poorly implemented online play on the Wii, was one of my I think one of the biggest failures of the Wii. I haven't upgraded to the Wii U yet, and we'll get into that in a moment. But I still play Mario Kart Wii all the time. It's my fiance's favorite game. She kicks my butt in it so hard. We still play it whenever we have friends come over. But I've got good friends who are located, you know, farther away from me. And I would have loved to have spent all those years playing Mario Kart with them. It had this weird friend code system, and it just didn't work.
Mm. Yeah, it's been a problem. I mean, I have played in the Wii U, and it looks like it's kind of like getting undesirable text messages from people you don't know, which is sort of bizarre. Like, you'll be playing a game and there'll just be this pop-up and it'll be like, Bob from Arkansas says that level was real hard. And do I need to know that Bob thought that level was really hard? I don't know. Do I need to be subjected to his typos and lack of English language? Maybe not. Also, people use it. It could be cool, and it has been cool in other Nintendo implementations, like one of my favorite things about being at the Penny Arcade Expo when the DS first came out, or well, not the DS first came out. I had a DSi at that time, but it was before the 3DS, was that people were doing huge collaborative games of Puzzle Quest where you could just go and like, you'd stand near someone and you'd agree to have a match. And then you'd, you know, go against one another head to head, and whoever won would go up the ladder. And people were also doing Picto Chat, which was something they had on the DS where you could like just draw a picture and post it so that people who were near to you, like it's near technology, near ID, would be able to pick up on it. And that was kind of fun because people were actually taking the time to draw something beautiful. But more often than not, when it's on the Wii U, it's just scribbles and it's not even like trying hard to be good. It's people scribbling, giving the bird to someone, or like drawing a penis. It's not good.
Well, but that is, that's the other side of the argument here, right? Is the social part of the portable gaming has been a complete success on Nintendo's end. The original DS, while it was a little ugly as a system, has been and its descendants now, the DS Lite, the 3DS, and all of that. They've had some really cool social gaming. Some of my favorite gaming experiences was getting a lot of people together and playing Mario Kart DS together. And then they have these, Moira, you probably know this better than I do, but they have these different games where if you have your DS in sleep mode and you're walking around and there's someone else, it transmits information from DS to DS, and you can pick up on stuff and you can unlock stuff and things like that.
It's like geocaching, sort of. It's a cool idea. It's a really cool idea.
It's really, that stuff has really taken off.
Well, and I mean, it surprises me that it's taken us this long to get around to talking about their portable stuff, because in all honesty, it's in a class of its own to many degrees. Like the things you could do with the DS were amazing. The DSi came with two cameras at a time where my phone didn't even have a camera. And it took pretty good pictures too. They've always incorporated educational pieces into it. There was a music maker in it that was extremely fun. I had a great time taking photos of myself and my cousin and using some of the special effects, like the sort of like pseudo Photoshop things, to turn our faces into like squishy faces or huge faces. And these are things that Nintendo doesn't even market. It's just a piece of the hardware for them. Yeah. It's free downloadables. They also had a free browser on it, so if you needed to check your email, you could. So I think it's unfortunate because they're still never going to take that market away, because they're not willing to turn their hardware into phones, which is what would effectively make it something that then, say, Conrad could be on her commute and still get her email and still be able to call people. But you can't do that with a DS. You can't do that with a 3DS. It's exclusively a toy just for gaming, and it always will be. I don't see Nintendo going that direction at all. The only thing they're willing to learn from phone makers, or you know, let's say Apple and Android, and Miyamoto has talked about this, was the idea that they need to bring their hardware divisions together so that the folks who are working at Nintendo on the 3DS are also working with the people who are creating the Wii U, so that they're making compatible hardware where they can share different games between different platforms. Because right now you can buy a game on an iPad, you know, probably play it in your browser on your MacBook Pro, probably play it on your iPhone. And you can't do that with Nintendo. You have to buy it separately every time. And the functionality is so wildly different between the Wii U and the 3DS that there's no way that as a programmer you could create a game that would work effectively on both platforms, right?
Well, so the portable division of Nintendo has been one of their crown jewels. The Game Boy is one of their early successes, and its descendants, and there were many of them in the 90s with the Game Boy Advance, the Game Boy Pocket, the Game Boy Color, all of those. In my day job, I work with a lot of kids, and I work with a lot of teenagers and young adults. And there's a very interesting trend I've noticed. This is completely anecdotal. I'm not using any data here. I'm just talking about the people I see. What I've noticed is with my with the teenagers that are my patients, and many of the young adults, when they're in the waiting room many of them are playing on their DS, on their 3DS, and they all turn the 3D off. I don't think anyone uses the 3D.
I hate the 3D.
Yeah, it just burns your... You know what it reminds me of?
It reminds me of...
Yeah, it reminds me of using the Virtual Boy and the way that kind of burned my eyes.
3D is never a good idea. Sorry, guys.
Oh, no. Yeah. The Super Fantastic Nerd Hour is not a fan of 3D. But the teenagers and young adults are playing the 3DS. Young kids, the kids below 10, 11, 12, they're playing on a tablet. They're playing on a phone. They're playing on a some type of mobile device that's either Android or iOS based. That is an interesting trend where those kids are really much more comfortable with touch. And of course, a DS had touch before other people had touch and had that interesting stylus use. But touch and mobile gaming is kind of the future there. And Conrad, that's what you play now. And you're right, Moira, Nintendo's drawn a line in the sand here, saying that's not a market we're going to get into. We are going to continue to make these toys that are separate experiences.
Well, they have gotten into touch a little bit, but I mean, and Conrad, I'd like you to speak to this too, just shortly, but the idea that there is a generational difference between how you feel comfortable interacting with video games is so true, even in the fact that you're going to find this weird, I'm sure, with Mario Kart 8, you actually turn the controller, not that you're not doing that already on the Wii with the handheld Wiimote, but it feels so much weirder when you're looking at the screen and tilting. And I used to do that as a little girl when I was trying to play any kind of racing game. You know, I'd have like the Xbox controller in my hand or the PlayStation controller, and I'd be like contorting my body to the left and the right. And my friends would be laughing at me being like, you know, that's not actually going to make your car stay on the course any better. You'd really just need to use the pad. So I've been trained to use manual finger touch controls. And now they've finally made it so that I could just turn the whole damn pad. And it feels so foreign to me, so wrong. It's taking a long time for me to get into it. And that is my excuse for losing today at the 50cc Mushroom Cup. And I'm sticking to it. End of story. But Conrad, like, did you feel that weirdness when you were like transitioning from a manual pad to like something more wave it like a wand at the television and suddenly your thing's moving?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a friend of mine lent me his DS Lite to just see the difference, because I had been playing Tetris on my phone and I'd been playing these other games on my phone, and he was just like, well, you have to see what the difference is. It's like totally different. And it is. But I actually found the phone to be a lot more intuitive and to learn how to deal with the games on there. And then when I tried to play the Wii at your house, I was miserable at it. because it's a totally different set of rules, and I have it ingrained in me that, you know, this controls this in this way, and there's limitations to using a controller. There's ways to hold it so that you don't have your hands cramp up and whatever and all this crazy stuff. And now they're actually, I think, making things, I don't want to call them ergonomic, but they kind of are.
Well, there is a touchscreen on the gamepad. Like when you get a Wii U, as you all will after listening to this show, I'm sure, or probably because of Super Smash Brothers, it's weird.
Or Star Fox, probably because of Star Fox.
Or Star Fox, or Mario Maker, or, shall I say it, Yoshi's Woolly World. That's what I'm waiting for. Yeah, I'm a knitter. I love it. There's so many good things, and I know we're going to talk about 2015 and what that's going to mean for Nintendo, but... can we sort of go into crowdsource creations a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things I just want to mention here that's so fascinating about what you guys are talking about is the generational differences. Mm-hmm. The Nintendo came out in an era when many adults thought there was something weird and strange about video games. Now, the people that were growing up on Nintendo are adults. We know video games are just another form of entertainment, just like books and films and TV shows. And so video games have become legitimized. But are we kind of holding ourselves back here a little bit? Because when I play Mario Kart, whether it's on the Wii or when I'm playing at my friend's Wii U, I don't want to use the tablet thing. I don't want to use the wheel in the air. I want to use the nunchuck and the Wiimote in my hand and use it like I've played every video game system prior. That's how I play the Wii U. And I look at young kids nowadays, and not even young kids, but people who are gaming but might not identify themselves as gamers. They're playing on their phone, on their tablets. It's all touch-based. Mm-hmm. So it's this interesting difference in generations that's based upon the interface you're used to.
Well, maybe, but I don't know. I think you can rewire your brain to do the other things as well, Ollie.
Oh, totally. I mean, the brain is a very cool plastic thing.
Like, I think some of it, I think some of what allows me to kind of go between the different things is because I was not doing some of these. I was not, you know, buying the new consoles and trying this stuff out. So I'm just a little bit, you know, it's almost like, okay, I'm not really married to that idea of gaming.
Yeah, the learning curve is always painful. That is no matter what happens. Like, I borrowed my partner's Android phone while we were traveling, and I usually use an iPhone, and it was like being in hell. I could not understand it. I started slapping the screen. I was streaming abuse at it. It was very unfortunate. And you're right, it's the same. You can grow to learn to know anything. You just have to put yourself through that really difficult couple of weeks where you're back to being a child again, and you're learning from scratch.
Well, okay, so speaking of learning to grow into a new thing, Moira, Wii U.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
I have one. I was a little nonplussed at first. I have to admit, when Christmas came around this past year, both my mother and my partner's mothers, since we have not yet spawned, so they don't have people to buy tiny onesies for, they were like, "What console should we buy you? Do you want the Wii U?" You 30-year-old people, come on. And we said no. We didn't want it because we hadn't heard of any amazing games that had come out for it. And like Nintendo says, software sells hardware. And it is also a function of life. Like, we own a house now. I have a garden that I have to maintain. I cook my own food. You know, I commute to work. The amount of timing and disposable time that I have to game is less. And I already own, like, what, 6 gaming systems hooked up to my TV? And there's only so many HDMI ports on my television. So it became a sort of strategic thing. Like, well, okay, well, if we buy that, what are we going to unhook to make room for it? We use the PS3 to stream our, you know, Netflix. We use the, you know, we're not going to unhook the Xbox, even though we haven't played it in like a year. But eventually, as I said last month, when Mario Kart 8 came out, that was it. Game over. We had to have it. We bought it. And it is a cool thing. It's a really interesting concept. One of the things I really liked, obviously, first thing that we played on it was Mario Kart 8. It's amazing. There's some great levels, some fun unlockables. It's just as good as it ever was. But I actually am really intrigued, sort of slightly annoyed by, but intrigued by Nintendo Land, which is basically what WarioWare has grown into. It's a showcase to show off what the new hardware can do. And so it has a whole series of tiny mini games. And one of the ones that I like best in terms of sort of showing off what it can do, there's Donkey Kong's Crash Course, which shows up in all sorts of little videos about it, where you're sort of tilting the controller in an arcade fashion to sort of roll your little guy through a course. It does a lot of cool stuff. You blow into it to sort of elevate yourself up inclines. And I don't know, it's a really neat feeling. And then for some of the multiplayer or two-player, we tried the Zelda Battle, which was really fun. Metroid Blast, which was really fun targeting. Although I enjoyed doing that more with the old Wiimote and Nunchuck than with the new controller. And Luigi's Ghost Mansion, where one of you has the controller and you're the ghost, and the other one of you is looking at the screen with a Wiimote and moving it around, and you're Luigi hunting for the ghost with your flashlight. And that was a really fun concept of having sort of two different screens playing the same game, but with a wildly different experience. It felt kind of like Scotland Yard, where one of you is Mr. X and the other one's like hunting for you. And I love it when Nintendo does that, when they're just trying to sort of be like, here's what we can do. You know, we only had the time and the resources to make these tiny mini games to show off our capabilities. but just wait. There's going to be stuff coming. And I hope that not everybody takes the attitude that Ubisoft has. I have to admit, Ubisoft are kind of on my hit list right now. I'm super not pleased about the...
So what was it that you Ubisoft did?
Ubisoft in Assassin's Creed Unity basically said that they didn't have the resources to create a female playable character.
Yeah.
There are females in the game, but they're all sort of bending over to get milk and being leered at by random soldiers. And I'm just annoyed. I think it's, I recognize all of the practical reasons why it might be expensive. I also recognize that, hi, maybe plan for that from the beginning, guys. Like, try a little bit harder for my market. If you want my money, you're going to have to accommodate me. And not just me. Like, I have watched my partner play all three Mass Effects as FemShep. He loves playing female characters. He's like, why wouldn't I want to play a character where every time she takes clothes off, I'm looking at a naked woman? Come on. Like, seriously. But, you know, like that's, I think it's just, it's belittling both men and women not having both genders available. And it shortens the game options for sort of various things like romances, which I know we're going to get into in the diversity segment. Means you can't do a lot of things that you could do otherwise.
Well, I also think that it is discounting the fact that the gaming market and the people who play games, there's men, women, everybody involved, and this is just such a, that is just such a very lame excuse, in my opinion, and in making a, when you're investing that much money into developing a game, and that's your excuse, give me a break.
Yeah, it occurs to me only now that you might have been asking me a totally different question, which was what did Ubisoft do to Nintendo, which would have been more on topic.
Well, I mean, sorry. Well, we're on the topic of diversity here. I think, you know, we know that half of all gamers are women. We know that this is a diverse market, and it's pretty stupid of Ubisoft to do that. But here, Nintendo's a little guilty as well. I mean, this is the company that gave us Samus in one of the most mind-blowing revelations in gaming history. A lot of people played through the original Metroid, and then when it's revealed at the end that this character is female, people were shocked. And so this is the heritage of Nintendo. However, where Nintendo is now, there's been a lot of criticism of Mario Kart and how all the characters are white, or they're like Donkey Kong, I guess. And there was a Tomodachi. Yeah. So there was some controversy there that Nintendo did not allow. They only allowed male and female unions, and it's this Sims-like game. And while they said, quote, "We apologize for disappointing many people by failing to include same-sex relationships. Unfortunately, it is not possible for us to change this game's design, and such a significant development change can't be accomplished with a post-ship patch." And John Oliver, Moira, you sent us his coverage of that, which was great. Nintendo said, "We are committed to changing this in the future." But where Nintendo is right now in regards to diversity, I don't know if it's doing that much better than Ubisoft. It's not sort of flipping its finger off at gamers, but it's not, it hasn't really done much to push itself since Samus.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ubisoft right now is actually punishing Nintendo to a certain degree by saying that they're not going to release games for the Wii U until more people buy Wii U's. They're saying 6 million units sold is not enough, and they won't give an actual number. They're not like, once you guys make it to 10, absolutely, we're on board. They're just saying, yep, no, we've had a game made, we're ready. We've had a couple games. We've got them sitting there in the hopper. They're all ready to go. Had them for 6 months. But we're going to wait till you get to a critical point before we put them out. Because we don't want to waste our marketing dollars on games that may not sell enough products to make it back. And I'm like, well, that's kind of a circular argument to some degree. If we're saying that software sells hardware, don't you think releasing your games might actually help sell more Wii U units?
The numbers here are concerning. So if we look at 2014, we have really one game out right now that is moving moving Wii U's, and that's Mario Kart 8. And it is a fantastic game. Yes, it's more of the same, but it's more of the same of an awesome game. And but if we look at other aspects here, Miyamoto has, when the Wii U came out, he said, the key to this system is showing people why they need a console with their with that gamepad, with that tablet. Mm-hmm. And I think up to this point, while there's been some cool proofs of concept and some nice nice games here and there, Nintendo hasn't necessarily been able to do that. They have been able to move those sales. And then there's people like me. So I have a Wii. I have Xbox 360. I am debating what to upgrade to. And I'm sort of in between here. I love the first party Nintendo games. And then every now and then, there's some of the more traditional games that I love. I'm a huge fan of the Batman Arkham series, Arkham City, Arkham Asylum, and I can't wait for Batman Arkham Knight. And they said, sorry, we're not going to be on the Wii U. And I think their explanation was it can't handle the Batmobile. But that's kind of a stupid explanation.
But there's... I mean, they're also talking about using the tablet specifically, using it not just in that sort of two-player different screens way, but also different screens for different purposes. Like, you don't both have to be playing the same game. So if my partner and I want to sit in the same room and I want to watch House on Netflix and he wants to play Mario Kart 8, he can do that on the tablet while I'm streaming through the Wii, watching Netflix on the big screen. And that's kind of neat. Like, I know, and this is another way Nintendo's trying to sort of bring people together in the same space. I know that's bringing them together by making them sit next to one another doing completely different things. But for some people, including my household, that's bonding, right? Like, we like to sort of be in the same room, you know, snuggled up on the sofa. But, you know, I'm not always going to want to watch Black Hawk Down, and he's not always going to want to watch me play Chibi Robo.
Is Nintendo too late to the party here, though? With phones, with tablets, with computers, we can kind of already do that. And I mean, is the Wii U gamepad enough of a game changer here to replace some of those other devices? I think how you framed it, this is a very it's a common problem that a lot of us have. What do I unplug to make room for this new console?
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Which HDMI port, you know, gets a priority?
P.S. We solved that with a switcher. Just FYI. People, it can be done, folks. It can be done. Or buy a new TV. That was option B, and we're still thinking about that one. 8 ports. Yes.
Well, and then Moira, there's these other trends that you were talking about before the show. Could you tell us a little bit about this whole idea of crowdsource creations?
I do like it very much because I think the idea of educating yourself with video games, people joke about it a lot. Like, I have friends who are absolute masters of Guitar Hero, and they're like, damn, I feel like after investing 200 hours playing this game, I should be able to play a guitar. But you can't, right? Like, it teaches you something about reading music, but it doesn't really teach you how to play a guitar. So in terms of practical skills that video games can give you, Nintendo's done a lot in that market. It's done like Cooking Mama. Arguably, if you want to learn to be a surgeon, you could buy the DS game Trauma Center Under the Knife, which is like, you could buy the one with, I can't remember what it's called, Phoenix something, Attorney at Law, where he keeps saying, I object. But the real thing...
That does not sound like an exciting game.
Oh, it's an amazing game. It's an amazing
what?
Game.
Like, really?
It's really funny. It's really good. Yeah. Anyway, you should try that out. I'll send you a link after this. But cool. For actually learning how to do something, the best thing you can learn to do is how to build video games. And they do level creation. This has become a big trend lately with Minecraft, people building their own levels. Little Big Planet does it to an extreme degree. You can really create a lot in that game. And so Mario Maker is coming out soon, and it's sort of the heir to Mario Paint, which came out a long, long time ago. And most people nowadays who still sort of mess around with it do it to make music because it has a music maker in it. But I think Mario Maker, which will let you build your own courses, answers a lot of things. It means that it's always going to be fresh, always changeable, always that sense of play and creativity and not just smashing things down, but building them up. And it means that you can make it basically however you want it based on your skill level. So if you are a super gamer And, you know, you only get joy out of playing Zelda on hero level so that you're getting, you know, destroyed and there's no hearts around, you can build a really hard level. Or if you want to build something, you know, to your lesser skill level, like me, then you can build something where it's just Mario walking along the ground and then, whoa, look, there's the pole in the castle. You're done. No boss. I think it's a really interesting idea, and it's really giving more credit to the people who own the systems than a lot of other systems are. I don't know how it will weigh up next to Little Big Planet. I'll be curious to see, but I will be buying it when it comes out because I want to see what I can do with it.
And that's one of those games that is tapping into a trend, and it reminds me of a lot of the SimCity games and how much that was fun to create something and then destroy it and then create it back up again. And at the same time, like, I am so torn here because I see things like Mario Maker and how interesting it looks, and then it and how modern it is of a game, and how that's very much a part of Nintendo's DNA, this creation, and, you know, Mario Paint and all those other games that you mentioned. At the same time, I'm seeing more examples of Nintendo relying on its core characters. I'm seeing more examples of Nintendo having very simplistic avatars compared to what we see in other systems. And something, Maura, you also mentioned before the show, the voice work and how they haven't really invested in the voice acting to the degree that we've seen in other games.
That's very true. And I got to tell you, I don't see them outdoing PlayStation on Little Big Planet in that arena because they got Stephen Fry. Come on. How can you beat this? It's unbeatable. This is the man who narrated the Harry Potter series, like, as audiobooks. He's fantastic.
I don't know. Get Hugh Laurie. Have a battle.
That's true. You could get Hugh Laurie. Okay.
That's and
Conrad has found the answer. That's fantastic.
Or Conrad, email Nintendo.
I would take Benedict Cumberbatch in a pinch.
This is the best debate ever.
Who should narrate Mario Maker? But that's the thing. They won't have a narrator because they don't care about voice work. Mm-mm. Sucks.
Well, and something, I mean, that's the thing. It's like there are definitely things that they've been doing lately that are a lot more interesting, as Moira has been pointing out. But are they going to be able to keep up? Is this enough?
Well, this also, you know, we're talking about a company that experiments, and in many ways, this is a company that is conservative, in weird, strange ways. And they don't really, again, this kind of comes back to Apple. Apple never invests in the cutting edge technology. It never put a Blu-ray player into any of its devices. It hasn't invested in near field communication. It sort of takes its time and does what it wants to do. And Nintendo's very same way. I feel like they're gambling everything on 2015.
Although, to be fair, I will just say Nintendo did invest in near field communication for the Wii U.
Oh, interesting. I didn't even know it's in there.
It's how the controller talks to the main device.
Oh, cool.
True story. But I'm going to go back and double check that now because I'm worried that I'll have committed the ultimate sin of saying something untrue on a podcast, but I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Well, Moira, I think you and I are on the same page here with Nintendo being the clear winner of E3 this year. They were the company that had the most exciting titles that they were announcing. They're going back to some of their classics. Star Fox finally coming back. I'm so excited about that. Very vivid, imaginative games. They're hoping 2015 is going to be this perfect storm, and that'll really push sales. I hope it's true. But it's, I don't know. I'm delaying this decision on what system to upgrade to see how 2015 plays out for Nintendo.
You seem really worried. I don't. I think that Nintendo has a lot on their side in terms of what they're doing right. They are most definitely reaching out to their core, you know, people who love them by doing their own little mini E3s every week. They're giving like constant reporting on what they're developing. They're doing some good sneaky marketing. They actually, I can't believe that I'm cross promoting Conan O'Brien because he really doesn't need it from me, but I love Clueless Gamer. I will watch Clueless Gamer all day and all night. And they gave him an advanced copy of Super Smash Brothers, which is still totally in beta. They don't have anything ready. They don't have the box ready, which was awesome because he played it. The people on his team were super excited about it. It was a really good, fun little review of a very limited release of just like seeing a couple of characters play in one unlockable. And I think that's clever. That's really good. That's knowing where your audience is going to and going there to try to get them excited about stuff.
Okay, but you're pointing out, like, what audience is watching Conan O'Brien?
Gamers.
Okay, but what? How old are those gamers?
Older, but they have money to buy systems.
They do, but the future is also in the younger gamers getting hooked. So that's the other interesting thing. So I'm curious if Ali knows what his younger patients are actually playing on those when they're playing on tablets and things
this
like
is-
that.
This is exactly the thing. Look, Nintendo got us when we were younger. There was the Mario Brothers cartoon. Right before we started recording, a friend of the show, Zucky, at Zucky's Corner, was telling me about Captain N, which was this show about this Nintendo universe that this guy gets sucked into. There was the Nintendo... Yeah. Serial system. there was the horrible Super Mario Brothers movie. Nintendo was very much a part of the zeitgeist for a very long time. And my fear really is about whether or not the younger generations now, you're right, Conrad, these kids that are playing on their tablets, what games are they playing? And I don't see those young kids being as exposed to Nintendo as necessarily the three of us are, where we do have this nostalgia, where we love Clueless Gamer, where we're the ones watching Conan, we're the ones who are playing the retro games, we're jailbreaking our phones so we can get these illegal emulators on because we love Mario that much. You know, think about it. If Nintendo did release the original Mario Brothers into the App Store on Android and iOS, boom, it would be... Yeah. Newbie number one.
You're completely right. And I think that is the one place that they are totally shooting themselves in the foot. And it makes me so upset because it's the same frickin' problem HBO is having with Game of Thrones. I would toss money at HBO for Game of Thrones if they just sell me that one show. But no, I have to sign up and become an HBO person who has cable, which I don't. And it's the same thing with Nintendo. Even if they just had a Nintendo app that I could get on my iPhone, I would pour money into that thing for in-app purchases. I would be like, heck yes, I'm going to pay you for all the games I used to have so I can play them while I'm sitting on the GO train for like an hour every day. They'll never do it. I just don't see them doing it. I wish they would. I'm with you on that. And I think that is one of the main sticking points to them prospering in the future where it is phone gaming that is what's really taking off.
Conrad, we've caught up to the present. What do you think about venturing into the undiscovered country and heading into our infinite crossover chamber? Do 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 do. Bow 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 bow
bow. So Moira and I had a bet before we began.
We may have had a bet going.
What was the bet?
The bet was what theme song you would do at this moment in time, and Moira won the bet.
We also figured you would sing. We knew there'd be singing somehow.
Well, what did you bet, Conrad?
I thought you were going to do the...
No, that's going to be my outro. Oh, now I gotta have to think about something else.
Oh, man.
I love Nintendo.
They don't do voice acting well, but they sure do horrible little catchy tunes beautifully.
Oh, absolutely.
And I will also say when we were in Japan, Moira and I actually had a crossover in Japan, a very brief but fascinating crossover where we went to a gothic steakhouse in Tokyo.
True.
And while we were there, what you notice is that when the trains are coming, there's different tones to tell you when the trains are coming into the station, when they're leaving, I think perhaps what line, but I didn't get that deep into that detail. And suddenly all the Nintendo sound effects made sense after I heard these tones at the station.
Oh, interesting.
I recorded some of them. They're on my YouTube. I'll send over. But all right, are we doing this? Are we doing this battle?
So, So Conrad, what is in our Infinite Crossover Chamber today?
In our Crossover Chamber is Nintendo versus PlayStation. Only the strong shall survive. Or which one do Moira and Ali think will survive? Because I'm going to remain somewhat of an impartial judge, or just kind of a not informed judge. So, so you guys, go for it.
Like Highlander, there can only be one, and Dragonheart, I am the last one. All right, let's open up this debate. Moira, this was really your idea, and it seems like you thought Nintendo and PlayStation would be the natural companies to compare.
Well, they are both Japanese companies, and I do think that that cultural origin has some serious impact on the way that they think and the way that they are playing the game. Nintendo is the old revered master in the corner. They were established in 1889. They're playing the long game. You know, in the 1960s, they made a radical decision to move away from just electronics into toys. And in the 1970s, they were like, okay, let's go to video games. And now they're doing some sort of mysterious movement into like non-wearable technology and like quality of life, whatever that means. So they're gamblers, but they've got a lot of experience under their belt. Sony is the new kid. They were established in 1993, not 1893. And, you know, they have a lot of other things on their plate. They're still manufacturing electronic products. They're still making televisions. They're still making laptops. They make all sorts of stuff, cameras, and phones. And so it'll be interesting to see going forward. I think Nintendo has a future. I believe in Nintendo. And I think one of the things that a lot of people denigrate about Nintendo is the nostalgia factor. They say, oh, when did Nintendo really create a new character? I don't know that that's what Nintendo's all about. I don't think they're about building new characters. I think they're about taking the existing characters that they know people love, making them fresh for each new generation, and getting into the idea of the gameplay. Like, really, how are you enjoying these characters? How do we make them new? What do we put them into? How do we let you become them? So I believe in Nintendo. I think Nintendo can outlast Sony, partly because I had two Sony laptops and one camera die on me. And I still have a functioning Nintendo 64 sitting downstairs, and up until like 3 years ago, an NES. So those things are durable, man. They last.
Well, I'm having flashbacks to the viral campaign for The Dark Knight. I want to believe in Nintendo.
I think that's X-Files you're thinking of.
Oh, well, there's X-Files too. I want to believe here, and maybe I am the Scully to your Mulder, and we'll see what side Conrad falls on. I think you're right. These are interesting companies, and it's right to throw Xbox out of this debate, because Xbox is a very American video game system. Their biggest titles are these sports games and these shooters. And we see just more of that coming from Xbox. Xbox is interesting because they've also done some experimentation and they're investing in Kinect. And part of me just wishes we could have sort of Kinect and Nintendo have a child and see what that system would be like. Because I think that would be, these are really interesting technologies that are playing out. But Xbox is, you know, they do things a little bit differently. One of the things that you mentioned here when we're thinking about what to do in the debate is this idea of parent companies. Mm-hmm. And the diversity of Sony versus the diversity of Nintendo. Sony makes a lot of stuff. As you mentioned, your some of those items broke, and I too had a Sony camera, a CyberShot, one of the originals that no longer works. Sony makes TVs, and they make small devices and large devices, and they used to be considered one of the best brand names around back in the 90s. Not so much anymore. And Sony also did a lot of proprietary stuff. They had their memory sticks instead of more flash based stuff. They had the Sony mini discs instead of CDs. They've always kind of
Very proprietary.
Yeah, and they've done some of the experiments experimentation, which I think Nintendo has also done. But Sony is a diversified company. They can still survive if the PlayStation fails. Nintendo, on the other hand, has the Wii U, and they have the DS line, the 3DS. That's about it. They do make some arcade games. You can play Mario Kart in the arcade. I think in America, pretty much Dave and Buster's is the only place you can find that. But I think they make more of that stuff in elsewhere in the world. I don't know. I mean, Nintendo has outlasted Sega. They have outlasted Atari. They are the company that many consider to have saved video gaming from being just a fad. They're the company that is continuing to try to reinvent the way games work, although Microsoft is doing that a little bit now with the Xbox, and PlayStation is trying to develop more Oculus Rift type technology. They're also the company that has innovated with controllers and changed the way those things work. I don't know here. I don't see Sony doing too much innovation in their gaming. I think a lot of the Sony games are also available on Xbox, and Nintendo has more primary titles. I think Nintendo fans are much more fans of their system than Sony fans are. I think Sony fans like the Sony, and they like how you don't have to pay for online services as you do on Xbox. But beyond that, I don't really hear from many Sony fanboys. Jose Cardona, a friend of the show from the Geek Therapy podcast, he likes to tell me about how Sony customer service was really nice to him and Xbox customer service wasn't when he got the red ring of death. And that's why he's a Sony fan now. But you don't hear about so many people going, oh, Sony just, you know, Crash Bandicoot, man. I mean, wow, like amazing games. So there isn't a lot of innovative games coming out of Sony. There is Nintendo, but I still have these fears.
I think you should vote with your heart and your wallet and just go out there and, you know what, buy a Wii U. Tell your partner, your fiance, that you're getting it for Mario Kart 8. She'll just be like, that's cool, man. And, you know, bring it on home. Like, vote for the one that you know you love. I think that nostalgia is, it's worth something. It's worth something to you. And it's like, if I have friends over to my house and they've got little kids, I can feel comfortable parking them in front of a Nintendo and being like, put whatever you want in it, kids. It's going to be fine. And knowing that they'll have a good time, whereas I would not feel that comfortable with a PlayStation. I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I use my PlayStation plenty. I definitely use it for streaming media. But it does need constant updates. That's a thing. Like, every damn time I turn it on, it's like, excuse me, 84 megabyte update will take 65 hours. And I'm like, oh, no. This doesn't happen that frequently on the Wii U. It did when we first bought it, obviously, but I didn't have that problem with the Wii very often. I think they've got longevity on their side. I think they've stuck around through two world wars. I think they can stick around a little longer. I vote Nintendo.
I'm very afraid of the younger generation. I think we're losing that generation to other forms of gaming over console gaming. And I don't know if the three of us are enough to keep the Wii U afloat. 2015 is going to be the test. Now, lots of games coming out, but lots of games that depend on a little bit of nostalgia. I will probably pick up the Wii U. I probably will.
Do it.
I'll probably make it so. But I wonder if kids are going to. And I think the quote unquote hardcore gamers, again, whatever that is, they will buy a Sony or they will buy an Xbox. And those the Ubisofts of the world, the all those other companies, they're going to continue making games for both those platforms. And both those platforms have been doing just fine. And Sony's pretty diversified. If we're talking about what company is going to survive, I think Sony as a company is more diversified, and they will probably survive long into the future. If we're talking about what gaming systems are going to survive, Nintendo's doing more interesting stuff, but then PlayStation just kind of there. But no one's really talked about PlayStation being in danger, whether it was with the PS1 to the PS2, the PS3, or now the PS4. So I don't know. I think the future is uncertain for Nintendo.
I feel like you just shook the eight ball and it came up, cannot tell you at this time. I feel like that's what you just done.
That's where I'm voting. Yeah.
I will say one quick thing before shut off on this, which was the Amiibos. I didn't talk about these. Have you guys heard about these? They're like toys.
Yeah. I don't know how it works, but that's one of their gambles.
I'm not sure they know how it works either. To me, it looks like a big USB key that your dog or toddler is going to like chew on, and then you're going to lose it behind your sofa in like a day. And that's the one thing where I'm like, where are you going with this? Stop that. Yeah. It's ridiculous. That's my
fear here, Moira. I don't know if they know where they're going with this. I think they're like, oh, iPads are really popular. Let's make a tablet. Let's make a new system around this. And I worry about the strategic plan here for Nintendo. The future is uncertain.
Well, I think that Nintendo has very rabid fans, and that's true. And if they could just tweak a few different things, they could ensure their longevity forever. But I feel like their unwillingness to do so is what is going to shoot them in the foot. I am excited to see these new things that are coming out. Everybody's very excited for 2015. There's been some interesting press and things like that in marketing, as Moira has pointed out. But the future of this is to get people, it's to get them hooked on it when they're young. And yes, it's appropriate for children to play now, but children want to play this the way they play all games. And at this point, even my 3-year-old nephew uses the iPad to play games. Or the iPhone, and he knows how to use them. That's what he's comfortable doing. I just don't see him as a 4-year-old plugging into a console and playing a game at this point. I mean, maybe he would if you set him up to do it. But generally, when he's playing games, he's playing them sitting on the couch or in the car or whatever. And I think without that flexibility, I worry a little bit for Nintendo.
I keep wanting to end this with Hanuken.
Yeah, I know.
Shoryuken.
Ooh, we'll win.
But anyway, I think it's uncertain as well at this point. Although, hopefully, we'll be able to change our prediction maybe after Comic-Con.
Guys, you got to believe. I believe.
I want to believe, but I guess this crossover is ending in a question mark, and that makes
perhaps
me sad.
A question mark block that when you punch it, fire flower will come out or a star.
We have no clue what's going to pop out of that. Is it a mushroom? Is it going to be that cool raccoon thing? Is it a raccoon thing? What's the thing that lets you fly?
The tanuki suit.
Yes.
Tanuki. Yeah. Okay, so my closing argument for positive thinking would have to be every time in Nintendo when you punch the question mark, something good comes out the top. It's never something bad. It's always good.
Let's leave on that note. So, dear listeners, let us know who you think will survive, Nintendo or PlayStation. We'd love to hear from you. And with that, we're going to close the doors on the Infinite Crossover Chamber. Boom, boom.
Very nice.
Thank you. And with that, as we enter the castle and have completed the level, let's take the warping pipe straight into our top 5 Nintendo products. So, we had really no rules here, except we're going to be ranking things that were made by Nintendo. So this could be a console, it could be a video game system, it could be something else. How did you guys come up with your top 5 list?
Well, mine don't necessarily involve everything that Nintendo actually made. So.
Oh, interesting.
Cool. I may have agonized about this for several hours last night while drinking an entire pot of tea. So, yeah, it was tough. It was tough making a call. I have loved so many things so long. And I had to rule some stuff out. But in the end, I decided to go on personal loves, like things that have meant a lot to me, not things that I think are necessarily politically motivated. Like, I could have picked Metroid Prime because of Samus, because, you know, I'm a woman and yay, but just stuff that I loved. That's how I picked.
Yeah, I also went with things that were important to me combined with a little bit of what was really big for the industry of video games. So let's go ahead and get started here. Moira, as our guest, why don't you start things off? What is your number five?
Ooh, all right. My number five would have to be Super Paper Mario for the Wii. And my reason behind this is that it is, I think, a great nod both to the past and to the future, which is a very Japanese thing to do. It respects the 2D side-scroller history of Nintendo, and you get a really fun game there. And then it flips you, literally, into 3D, and suddenly your controller can do whole different things. You can do different things. You can move through the space sideways and see what's hiding behind the blocks. And it's just a fantastic multidimensional adventure. It's not too hard, so I don't feel like I'm beating my head against a wall. And it's the classic characters in what I think is one of their best modern guises. I loved it.
Good pick. It's one of my favorites. It's just so visually beautiful too. Good one. Conrad, what do you got?
You guys, I really have nothing for this. This is totally true. I was making it all up. I'm only going to have one. Well, I will have two choices here. One is Tetris.
Love it.
Because yeah. It's just, you know, the game I play. But this is not, you know, all of my Nintendo favorite things have to do from, like, the 80s. So that's where I'm going to go here. I'm going to let you guys carry this top five.
You can fire off with the nostalgia, Conrad. I think that's just fine with us. Tetris is awesome.
How about you, Ollie?
My number five is Nintendo Power magazine. Here's why I went with Nintendo Power. Now, it's a magazine that existed for 24 years, 285 issues. And
you have them all in your basement, don't you?
Yeah, that would be awesome. There's certain issues, like I remember the cover and I remember what it looked like. It obviously folded with the collapse of the magazine industry. And, you know, while I grew up reading Nintendo Power and Game Pro and Electronic Gaming Monthly, the thing about Nintendo Power was it helped to create the sense of community before we had the internet. And I always look forward to getting my Nintendo Power because not only was it a preview of what's to come, and that was kind of the only way to really know and to be up to date on E3, because they didn't really report on E3 in the news or anything like that. So the magazines were kind of your link to this larger world of what's coming, but then also this community of gamers and cheats and tricks and things that people find out and drawings. They had this section where you could submit drawings and fans would share their stuff. It was a really cool way just to feel connected with other Nintendo fans. So I often look forward to my Nintendo Power. And as much as the internet is better than print and magazines, I still miss it.
Print is dead, baby. Print is dead.
Heard that one before.
Yeah, Egon.
In Ghostbusters 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Not that you should be embarrassed. Maybe a little.
Oh, man, this is going to haunt me forever.
Oh,
haunt me to my grave, Conrad. This is going to haunt me.
I had to say it. Sorry.
I know.
People will never forget.
I'll just save you by going to number four. So my number four would be Donkey Konga for the GameCube. I know it's an unusual choice, but I just have to say, I am really not that coordinated, and so I have...
Why is Dune on your list?
Because of the spice.
because spice is life?
Yes, spice is life, and more deep. no, this is an incredible universe. Have you read the books, or are you talking about the movie?
No, I read the book. I got it on audiobook, which is, I tried reading it in paper, couldn't get through it. I got the audiobook that got me through it. I have yet to make it through either of the adaptations.
What?
I made it through like half of the original, fell asleep, the one with Patrick Stewart. And then I tried watching the series, the miniseries on a few years ago, wasn't able to make it. So yeah, I haven't made it through the adaptions.
Oh, Ollie.
But I do listen to the audiobook.
Okay. I'll give it to you. It's just an incredibly detailed universe. There is so much going on here in terms of science and social commentary, and it like just with different. Again, there's a resources issue within the series that we've seen as we talked in Avatar and also the Apes, Planet of the Apes series. And there's a lot of commentary just about, you know, like the idea of what humans are doing or what these main characters are doing in order to mine this precious resource on the planet. And I don't want to get into too much because, like, honestly, this is a huge franchise and you could really spend forever talking about it.
Yep. Yep.
Just about the books, not to mention the film. And there's like also was a television adaptation too. But it's, I don't know. It was always one of my favorite book series.
Well, it gets into some of these ideas of evolution as well as kind of augmenting humanity using spice.
Well, and technology and sort of some of the pitfalls of that as well. You know, but it's, I don't know. And I admit Kyle MacLachlan in the movie. Awesome. Plus it has Sting. Come on.
Yeah, I know. It's very 80s. Dune's my number one pick.
Wait, it was really?
Yeah, it definitely was.
Oh, missed a mind meld.
We got a sort of one. Now,
that's lame.
So the reason why I put Dune as number one is it is a very influential book in science fiction. Many have compared Dune is to science fiction as Lord of the Rings is to fantasy. And it, for whatever reason, it hasn't captured the public consciousness as much as Lord of the Rings. But, you know, I think people should revisit it. It's tough to get through the beginning, but if you can sort of slog through the first few chapters, I think pick up.
It is a tough beginning.
I had many failed attempts at reading it. I have had only failed attempts at watching it, but I kind of had to get through it. My friends, my buddies, Matt and Lowen, both kept giving me a hard time throughout grad school for not finishing and not having read Dune because they were constantly quoting it left and right.
Yeah, but you know what? I will tell you, even for me, and as you know, in terms of my reading, like
you are the devourer of books.
I am the devourer of books.
Galactus.
And this was for me a challenge.
Yeah.
When I first started it, once I got, you know, it was really the first book. And once I got through like that first beginning, then it wasn't a problem at all. But it was definitely, it was a tough start.
Yeah. But it belongs to number one. It's a really important work of science fiction, and it gets a lot of the ideas of what might happen, you know, in the far future with humanity and how we might change. So that leaves us with your number one.
My number one is Anvil of Stars by Greg Bear.
Heard of it? Have not read it.
And quite honestly, I could have picked so many different books by Greg Bear, because this is a theme that he explores quite a bit. Eon is another book that he wrote that I think could have belonged very easily in this slot. But Anvil of Stars is, there are two books in this particular storyline. One is Forge of God, which is the first book, and the other is Anvil of Stars. Anvil of Stars came out in 1992, and Bill was actually the person that recommended it to me, which is incredible since Bill never reads fiction. It is one of the only fiction books that he owns and has and loves. And he gave me a copy of it and I read it. And it's this book about revenge and morality. And it definitely has some similarities to Ender's Game in some of the things it explores. But basically, the Earth has been destroyed, and sort of the survivors of Earth, or the children of the survivors of Earth, are sent away and helped by some alien species to basically take revenge. And there's a lot of questions along the way about why they're doing this and how they're doing this and what are the motives of the people or the species that are helping them, because they don't really understand why, you know, they're basically all their lives are spent training for this moment to find and get rid of the people that killed their planet, or the beings that killed their planet. And there is a lot of struggles with the main characters and what they're supposed to be doing, and why, and, you know, it's, there's a lot of question about whether the people or the beings that they're destroying are innocent and whether they knew what they were doing. And, it's very well written. The aliens are very well written. I highly recommend it to everybody.
Well, Greg Bear is all over an article on post-human science fiction at IO9. So he's definitely a beloved author in this area. And it seems like Anvil of Stars is his best work in this. So definitely something I need to add to my reading list and add to my never ending queue. The never ending queue. It's so long. It's so long. It's so long.
Oh, and I should mention, like, one of the coolest parts of this book were these aliens, and they're each individual chords that come together to make up braids, and the braids are sort of like one being.
Huh.
And then they can like fall apart and become separate. And it's like this, there's some really cool descriptions, like, and they give off different smells, the different braids, like depending on how they're feeling.
Huh.
So it's kind of like, it's just a very interesting book. So, and plus, you know, I figured that I should throw some Greg Bear in there since he was one of the founders of Comic-Con, and you're going to go next week.
Yeah, totally. And kind of sounds a little bit like Thundercats or some of those mech shows with these like different things that are able to come together and all of that sort of stuff. Cool. I've got just a few honorable mentions I'm going to throw out. Neuromancer.
I was thinking that too, but I had mentioned that before. So I didn't.
That's why it's honorable mention. Yep. Diaspora by Greg Egan. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I'm surprised that didn't make your list, Conrad.
Well, we were thinking post-human.
Okay. All right. But I think there's some augmentation happening there. And then I put Caprica on this list. I think the show, it doesn't really work, but it gets at some interesting ideas of consciousness and all of that. So that was my honorable mention. Do you have any?
Well, I mean, there's Terminator and there is Matrix. And I also, you know, I didn't know quite how to put this into our top five, but within The Outer Limits, there's a few stories by Harlan, why am I not coming up with his name?
By George R.R. Martin?
No. Harlan Ellison. Sorry. Of course, yeah. Harlan Ellison. You know, they actually give him credit in Terminator. They're one of his stories, I think, is called Soldier. It's obviously influenced Terminator. And he wrote a couple of other ones. There's a Demon with a Glass Hand, these are the kinds of things that would freak me out as a child, but then I would like think about them forever.
So
those kinds of things. And same with the Twilight Zone episodes. They often explore this kind of theme.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Have you rewatched any of the Twilight Zone
Absolutely, and they still captivate me whenever they do those marathons.
They really hold up, There's actually, they're on Netflix, I think, and Amazon.
Every episode, absolutely.
So I highly recommend those.
You know, we should do a Twilight Zone revisited episode on Nerd Hour at some point. I think that would be really fun.
And then my last honorable mention is a book by... I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you. It's by John Scalzi. It's called Old Man's War. And the idea is that the humans, when they are going to, they hit like a certain age, and then they sign up to become soldiers in like out in the wide world in the galaxy, because humans have to basically hold on to their territory. And so they get augmented into these different bodies. So they switch their consciousness into these like different bodies. And it's basically like they're conscripted to do this for 10 years before. And as long as they don't die, and there's a very good chance they'll die. It feels a little bit like Starship Troopers.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like it.
But it's a very entertaining book. And it's, I think there's now, there are two other books in the series, but this is, I think this is the best one.
Cool.
And it was optioned for a movie, but who knows when that will come out. So,
well, that was our top five post-human stories. Dear listeners, please let us know what's on your list. Let us know what you thought of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, what you think of the franchise, and let us know how much more awesome apes are than the Na'vi. So next week, I want to put a little shout out here. We will be, we're going to have an episode coming out early next week. Episode after that is a Comic-Con episode. That's going to be a little bit delayed. And I will be at Comic-Con next week on Thursday. I'm on a panel called The Psychology of Cult TV Shows. We're going to be diving into a lot of the topics that we typically explore here on Nerd Hour, including Doctor Who, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and a bunch of other cool stuff. So please come to that. That'll be on Thursday, July 24th at 8 p.m. And then on Saturday is the epic episode 4 of the Psychology of Star Trek versus Star Wars panel, done with my friend Dr. Andrea Ledamenti. I can reveal now that our guests include Rod Roddenberry, son of Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, the producer of Trek Nation, and president, I believe, of Roddenberry Entertainment. And we've also got Sam Witwer, who is from Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Being Human, as well as Battlestar Galactica. So please do come and attend that Saturday, July 26th. And we'll be talking about that stuff in a few weeks on Nerd Hour. So, Conrad, where can people find you on the internet this week?
This week they can find me on Twitter. I'm at DiePrince, and on my zombie podcast, Reanimated, which is reanimatedpodcast.com, and on Twitter, we're ReanimatedPcast.
Wouldn't it be funny if one of these days we're like, well, this week you won't be able to find me on Twitter. I'm just like taking a vacation from it.
Well, I need to be actually better about being on Twitter. I'm a very lazy Twitter user. So.
I'm
a lazy Twitterer.
You're kind of moving at an impulse when other people might be moving at warp speed. Nothing wrong with that.
You are definitely moving at warp speed.
Trust me, sometimes it's just a welcome distraction from the work of the day. Speaking of Twitter, you can find me at Olimatu on Twitter. And as always, I am the science fiction psychologist at BrainKnowsBetter.com. And next week, please come say hi at San Diego Comic-Con. Until next time, watch out for those damn dirty apes and live long and prosper.
Indeed.
Oh, this is something that's been mentioned on the show before. Conrad, for those who haven't heard, what is this beautiful creation?
We will add a link in the show notes, but this creation is a Super Mario Brothers 8-bit quilt that Moira designed and made and then very wonderfully auctioned off. Was it at Penny Arcade, Moira? Or was it?
It was for the Child's Play charity, which gives money to various children's hospitals around the world. And yeah, I was shocked. And I have a request to make about it because it sold at auction for more than I thought it was going to. I actually misquoted. It was $4,000, which is crazy. Wow. So in my mind's eye, I have this vision that it was either Will Wheaton who bought it, maybe, or like, I don't know who was at the auction, but they won't tell me who took it home. Oh, and I'm like, could it have been Miyamoto-san? Was he there? Did he buy it? So if anyone knows, please write into the show. I want to know if you've got my quilts.
Let's just go with Will Wheaton and Miyamoto having a auction battle to buy that quilt. Cause I love that idea. That is so cool.
Dreamy. Best image.
And it also, by the way, had like this super cool little pocket that had a pillow coin that you could put into the pocket.
That's right. Coin pillow. I was going to do star as well, but then, you know, I decided to just draw the line.
Well, my number one was the Nintendo Entertainment System. But before we get to honorable mentions, one thing I do want to mention here is I put out a call on Facebook and Twitter to see what everyone else thought and if they had recommendations. And you guys, we got so many messages back. I can't even read them all. But it's an incredibly... I am so surprised at the number of people who have such strong feelings and such love of Nintendo. And there's just so many things that we could draw from. So what didn't make the cut for you guys? What came close? What are your honorable mentions?
Well, I said Metroid Prime already because, again, Samus. And the only reason it didn't make it was because... I hate to say it, but I prefer Halo for multiplayer shooting things because I like having friends around me when I'm fighting creepy aliens in a space base. Puzzle Quest for DS, I adore, but Dr. Mario had to take that place. WarioWare is really good. Rayman's Raving Rabbids. It uses toilet plungers as a weapon. That's amazing. Those were sort of my near misses.
Conrad, did you have any honorable mentions? Or are you just struggling to come up with five?
I would say Game Boy and, you know, that kind of thing. I thought about putting it on the list, but I left it to the things that I could really talk about, and there wasn't all that much. So
I've got just a few here. The Wii... it's the only video game system I tried to get at launch and was unsuccessful, but did end up getting it soon after launch. We already talked about it, but the Nintendo Power Glove, just for how cool the idea is. Rob, Robotic Operating Buddy. he's on my honorable mention. The original Donkey Kong arcade game, and then the Super Mario Brothers cartoon.
I had the exact same problem you did with the Wii. I really did. I actually literally bought it from a guy almost off the back of a truck because they were sold out. I couldn't get it. And I knew someone who was selling one secondhand, and like they drove up on the street and I paid for it in cash and they handed it to me out of their car. I was like, this feels really sketchy.
In Canada, you did this?
In Canada, I did this. It's true. In the streets, the seedy streets of Toronto. But yeah, it was absolutely sold out everywhere. I tried and people were selling it on eBay. It was crazy.
Yeah. It was very overpriced on eBay and it just, it was a system to get and you just couldn't.
Yeah. I almost wanted to put on my list a thing that Nintendo never made, but maybe will now that they've got the, Yoshi knitting game coming out. They had a peripheral. Have you guys heard about this? In 2012, I think, Kotaku came out with a story about it. The Nintendo knitting machine where you could like plug it into your NES and it would like knit sweaters for you, but you could make the patterns as part of a video game.
You're making this up.
So not only are they going to make a holodeck, but they're also now making a replicator, basically.
They're making your clothes. Yeah, basically. I'm not making it up. I will make sure the link is included in the links, but it's a real thing. They were going to make it and it just didn't fly.
Well, speaking of links, thank you so much for joining us today, Moira. We had so much fun nerding out about Nintendo with you. Where can people find more of your work on the internet?
Well, I am Pipe Streams all over the internet and on Wii U. So you know, you can go send me messages or try to play any video game with me. You're going to beat me unless it's Dr. Mario. So I'm at pipestreams.org. That's where my blog is. And also I record audiobooks on LibriVox. So you can listen to more of my dulcet tones there. Lots of Jane Austen, some Sun Tzu, some Canadiana, that sort of thing. Oh, and I'm on Twitter as Pipestreams as well. So
awesome. Conrad, where can people find you this week?
This week they can find me on Twitter. I'm Die Prince on there, and also on my Undead podcast, Reanimated with Stuart Tiffin, and that is reanimatedpodcast.com, and on Twitter we are reanimatedpcast.
Awesome. And I am this week, if you listen to this episode before, I'll be at San Diego Comic-Con. You can come check out the Psychology of Cult TV panel on Thursday night, as well as the episode 4 of Star Trek, of the Psychology of Star Trek versus Star Wars. That'll be on Saturday. And in the meantime, if you're listening to this many years from now, and you know what's happened to Nintendo, please let us know, I guess. But in the meantime, you can find me at brainknowsbetter.com, where I talk about the psychology of science fiction. And on Twitter, I'm at Ali Matu. And Conrad, next week we'll be talking about San Diego Comic-Con.
And, you will, and I will be jealously asking you to recap every detail.
I'm sure there will be plenty for us to talk about. Moira, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I hope that I didn't say anything to enrage any fans, but all I can say is my love for Nintendo must have shone through.
Well, you know, nerd rage happens, Moira. It's all good.
I did want to fully disclose, I have never worked for Nintendo, nor do I now. But my partner and I did pool together in our concern about Nintendo and bought a whole 10 shares of Nintendo stock. So if this podcast results in any additional sales, you could increase my net worth potentially by pennies. That could happen. Except that in my country, we've actually just gotten rid of the penny. So it's actually a totally moot point. We don't have pennies anymore in Canada. They're done now. So that's my parting thing. Thank you so much for having me. I'll tune in next week for San Diego.
So until then,
live long and prosper.
Indeed.
Come on, sing us out, Ollie. Sing us out.
Let's do a mashup here.
I can only do Dr. Mario.